Hola, my proud Chicanos and lovely Chicanas. This is Fernando Amador, and this is Chicano Cast Podcast number 10. Today's show is special. I won't talk much because I have an interview with Mia St. John for you. Hell yeah, Raza Mia St. John. I want to thank her, first of all, for the interview, and second, for being so open. I'm a big ass chismoso, as you know, and Mia was willing to answer every question, and I really appreciate that, as I'm sure the listeners will also. Chicano casters, let me tell you, I've never seen such a beautiful woman who I know can kick my ass in 30 seconds or less. We did the interview outdoors, so there's some background noise, so bear with it, because the interview is really worth it. Also, in support of Mia, go ahead and follow her on Twitter and tell her how much you enjoyed and appreciated her being so open and honest. Don't forget to email me at chicanocast@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought of the show and the interview. Facebook me, ChicanoCast. Follow me on Twitter, also ChicanoCast. Okay, I'll shut my big mouth now, and here's Mia. Yeah, want to get started on these questions
okay,
I have for you?
Okay, go ahead.
By the way, it's Mia St. John here on ChicanoCast number 10, and just want to thank you for making it, giving me an hour or whatever
me.
We can do. I got a bunch of questions. And
okay, great.
We'll go through them. But I have three basic questions I want to ask of everybody who's a guest on the show is, how do you define Chicana? But I think we kind of covered that already.
Yeah, we covered that. Yeah, yeah. To me, it's
in
an
one
era.
In one sentence, how would you define Chicana?
I would
Chicana?
Say being Chicano is being born in a certain era, being born in the 60s, being born in Southern California, witnessing the aspects of the Civil Rights Movement, the Vietnam War, the Chicano movement. I think all that encompasses. Oh, and then obviously being born in the U.S. from having a mother that was born in Mexico and not being able to relate to either Mexican or American, but somewhere in between.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And my third question, do you eat frijoles?
I try not to. Well, you know, obviously, like, I grew up on that stuff.
We all grew up on
that
stuff. Yeah,
but, you know, yeah, but I try to eat as healthy as I can.
So where did you go to high school?
Everywhere. I was born in San Francisco, and shortly thereafter we moved to Brawley, California, and went back and forth to Mexico for a long time until my grandmother died. And then my dad, who was a starving college student, when he finally graduated, he started getting jobs. He's a nuclear engineer, so he started working on power plants all over the U.S. and the world.
Wow.
So we moved everywhere, everywhere. Literally, I think I lived in almost about every state in the U.S.
Wow.
But, like, our home base was always, you know, Southern California. Like,
mm-hmm.
That was always really home. And I finally planted myself here for good back in 85, 86.
When you started college, maybe?
When I graduated high school, yeah.
As a high school kid, were you a school girl? Were you like a sports? Were you a party girl, chola?
Yeah, I was definitely a party girl. And I did do sports, though. I did basketball, softball. My dad had me in Taekwondo at 6 years old. Again,
oh, wow.
It was the
uh-huh.
era of Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And he loved that stuff. So yeah, he had me in Taekwondo at an early age. So my fighting started way back when. But I definitely did the, you know, I wanted to be a blonde, so I definitely did the, I wasn't a chola, but I certainly took on the, you know, I peroxide my hair.
I mean, we called them cha-chas when I was in high school. I don't know if you remember that. The girls with the big hair.
Yes, okay, so I had the big hairsprayed hair.
Right,
and,
there you go.
And
because you carry your Aquanet with you.
Right, I had my Aquanet. But because we were so poor, you know, we couldn't afford to go to a beauty salon and get our hair dyed,
uh-huh.
So we had peroxide.
Yeah.
So our hair, being that it was black, turned orange.
Oh, my God.
So we had the orange hair, the dark, you know, the lip liner, and so I did all that.
Yeah. That was, I remember that in high school.
Must.
We called them cha-chas, but I remember that. And then you have a degree from Cal State Northridge in psychology, right?
Right?
What was your plan with that?
You know, I really didn't know. I worked with, I got credit for working with a lot of kids who were special needs kids, and worked with a lot of the mentally ill, and I ended up just, you know, I loved it, and I didn't know that I would use it years later, because I ended up having a son with a mental illness, and so all of that kind of kicked in, all of my knowledge and the kids that I'd worked with. So it turned out really well, but that was a requirement. My mother...
You mean the degree was a requirement, or a
requirement
college?
From my mother.
Did you get a degree?
Yes, because she would say, "I didn't bring you all the way over here for nothing. Like, you're going to be a college graduate." You know, and she demanded it of all three kids. We had to graduate from college. And I would tell her, "Mom, I want to be a boxer. I want to be a boxer." She said, "I don't give a what
Get
you
your
do.
degree.
You're going to have a degree." Because she always said, "You know, that's why we're in America. If you're not going to take advantage of everything they have to offer, then why be here? You know, we'll just go back to Mexico." And so, you know, I went to college, got my degree. All, my brother did, my sister did,
That's a good mom.
and then I
Wow.
turned pro. It's okay, Mom, I got my degree, and now I'm turning pro. She says, "Okay."
Well, that kind of leads into my next question. Some ChicanoCast listeners may not like, how much I stress the importance of education for Raza. And some may look at and say, me as a boxer, what good was her college degree? That was a waste of time or effort.
Oh,
What do you
no.
say to that?
It's never a waste because promoters couldn't talk to me the way that they could to a lot of fighters because I had an education. You can't screw me like you can screw everyone else. And first of all, I'm not going to stand for it because I'm an educated woman, you know? So
At least you get a different level of confidence, right?
you do, you have a different level of confidence and you have that respect from others.
Now, is it because you tell them, or as soon as you open your mouth,
Oh, they
they
know.
know
I
you're at
mean,
another
they
level?
know that you're at another level, the way that you're talking, the way that you're speaking.
Why do you think Raza doesn't value education like other cultures, or am I wrong?
I think a lot of it has to do with, truthfully, I just think that we're set up to fail in this country because if you look at, there's still so much racism today. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, we live in Calabasas and we pay property taxes on our homes, right? So our property taxes are through the roof. But those property taxes are used to go to our school, okay? So high property taxes, lots of money for our schools.
Good school district, yeah.
Right. So Calabasas High School, very nice, very well equipped. But who goes to Calabasas High School? A bunch of white kids. Mexicans still live in
Be
Calabasas.
working.
For me. And yeah, they're working,
Yeah.
right? They're the workers. Okay. So then you go to, let's say, East LA, Echo Park, Compton. Not very many. Not much in property taxes because the housing is obviously a lot lower. Not
Right.
many of them own houses anyway, so they're not paying property taxes. So anyway, their schools are crap. And I know this because I work with kids in Echo Park and I spoke at Compton High, so I know this to be true. That's racism right there. To have our property taxes based on our public school system is racism.
Doesn't give us a chance to begin with, right?
Right. So not only are we still separate, but we are still unequal. There's no equality there. So the white people in Calabasas get the great school system for their white children, and the kids in Echo Park, with no property taxes, have the crap. That is not equality, and that is racism. So our kids are set up to fail from the get-go. And until that changes, until we have an equal society, I just don't see how our Latinos can ever progress unless you have like parents like we did that forced the issue. But a lot of the kids that I work with, I have a program called El Saber Es Poder in Echo Park. A lot of these kids have parents like I had that didn't speak English. They can't help them with their homework. You
Yeah,
know?
that's right.
They're gonna flunk. So they're set up to fail. And unless we change that, I don't know what we can do. For my program, I get grants for that. And people say the same thing.
They want gyms.
I can just do it. Workout program. So what I did to get around it was, I said, "Okay, I will do that. Give me the money, I'll do that." And what I did was, yeah, I use boxing. I have them in the ring, but boxing is just a tool that I use. Once I get them in there, we have fun doing our boxing, but I use that as a way to talk to them, to sit down with them, and to talk to them about their schooling and their education. And we use books. And for every prize that they get, you know. They get a book or they get something related to education. But boxing is a tool. If you do well, bring me your report card and then we get to spar or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and so I found a way to work around it to kind of appease the system, but yet get what I want and give these kids what I want. My kids that first started in El Salvador, they would come in to me saying, "I want to be a boxing champion, champion of the world, blah, blah, blah." At the end of the program, none of my kids. You ask them what they want to do, none of them will say,
That's cool.
not
That is
one.
really
They
cool.
either say, "I want to be a history teacher," one wants to be an FBI agent. The other one wants to be a doctor. None of them.
And you know, that is awesome because I know the way I grew up, it's hard to think you could ever be that. You would see that on TV.
Right.
You would see white people being that.
Right.
So therefore, you thought you could never be
right.
that.
Right. And the fact that, like, if you go to these inner cities, you're, like, I would tell these companies, what do I want a boxing gym for? You have a freaking boxing gym in every goddamn barrio there is, and a liquor store at that.
Man, you're boxing on the streets.
Right. Why don't we just put in a computer, give these kids a higher education? No, 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 we're not going to fund for that. So, okay, give me funding for the boxing program. I'll do it my way.
Wow.
I'll figure out a way around it. That's racism.
We're labeled. We're stereotyped.
I think not only are we stereotyped, but it's a way of keeping us at a level where they think we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to educate you.
I don't want to. Well, I do want to ask you when you say they.
Who's they?
I don't want to put you on the spot, but who's
they? I'm paranoid.
But who's they?
The people that really run this country, you have your small elite group of old rich white men, you know?
The corporations.
Yeah.
People who run the corporations.
If you look at all the richest, wealthiest men in our, well, what do they all have in common?
Yeah.
They're all old, rich, and white. Very few Latinos.
In power.
Yeah.
And
I think that they want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
They would like to keep it that way.
I think you talked about this. Where the next question I had for you was, have you ever been or felt discriminated due to being brown? I think you touched on that many times, right?
Yeah, a lot.
It's funny because I bet I have more times than I actually realized because I'm kind of pendejo that way, you know? Because I can only remember maybe 3 times where I've been discriminated, like in my face.
Right.
It's probably happened so much more.
You know, it still happens to me today.
Really?
Today, to this day. Subconsciously, people do it. Like, I have people that will come up to me, you know, white people come up to me, and they'll try to talk to me without knowing me and try and speak in Spanish. They'll mock me, like, say something in, you know, like, I walked by this group of guys once, and they were, you know, saying stuff, and I just ignored them. And they said, oh, no hablas inglés, or, you know, stuff like that, you know. So there's still, like,
that's sexism and racism put together.
Yeah, it's almost like if people are going to cut me down, if they get mad at me, what's the first thing they come up with? Oh, let's insult her
race,
her ethnicity.
Yeah.
You know, let's do that because that'll really get her.
Yeah.
You know.
Let me move on. Again, we talked a little bit about this, but I was kind of pendejo, you know, wanting to be part Mexicano at times, and then other times thinking I was white, especially during my college days. And so I finally discovered I was I was Chicano and I accepted it. And again, I asked you all this already, but was there a point where you kind of said, I'm Chicana, where you kind of realized I'm not Mexican, I'm not white? Was there like a certain, can you say, in college, in high school, or when did that happen?
I think that happened later in life where I realized, okay, I'm not either one of you. Because I tried to fit in with both. Okay, I don't fit in with white people. Okay, let me go to the Mexicans. Well, I don't fit in with the Mexicans. Let me go back to, you know, I was bouncing around until I finally said, you know what? I'm in between. I'm in a world in between. I'm a breed of my own, and all of my friends are the same.
But also,
they're
was
all
it,
Chicanas.
To me, it was like a weight off my shoulders because I finally realized, hey, Chicano is its own culture, its own identity.
It is. If my girlfriends can relate to me because we're one and the same,
mm-hmm.
right? You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And we don't relate to someone who's puro Mexicano. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
We relate to the in-betweens,
yeah.
and that's why I get along so well with them, because, you know, when I would try to be Mexican, they would say, well, but why is your Spanish so bad, or, you know, why this, or why that? And,
Let's move on. What made you decide to box at 29? Because I read you started at 29.
Well, I didn't actually start at 29. I turned pro at 29.
Oh, you turned pro at 29.
Yeah. Well,
still, that's kind of late, though, isn't it?
It is late. I was in Taekwondo. My goal was to go to the Sydney Olympics, which would have been the year 2000. And the year was like 1996, and 95, 96, and I realized, like, wow, by the time 2000 comes around, you know, I'm going to be like 30s. That's way too old. I got to do something. What do I do? And I saw Christy Martin fighting on pay-per-view, and I thought, shit, I'll just turn pro in boxing.
I'll fight her.
Yeah. And which I eventually did. So I wrote a letter to Don King, and he wrote or called my manager and said, if she turns pro, I'll take her. And so I just said, bye, Taekwondo.
Really? That easy, huh?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't easy, but
But I mean, you're gifted athletically, I imagine, because it can't be easy.
it wasn't even that. Like, truthfully, I think I got lucky. I was at the right place at the right time. And my mother was, she came from Zacatecas, and a lot of the people there are indigenous. So they still believe in all the Indian spiritual beliefs, like, I can make things happen with what I believe, what I think I become, which is basically the Buddha's philosophy. What I think I become, our thoughts create our world. We can do anything we want if we believe it and we see it in our mind, right? We envision it. So my mother was a big believer in that. And so I did too. So I thought, everybody told me, well, you better start at the bottom. If you want to be an actor, you don't start with Steven Spielberg, you start at the bottom. And I thought, why? Why don't I just go straight to Don King? If he rejects me, oh well, who cares? I've been rejected my whole life.
So you weren't afraid of that.
I didn't care. I was
Yeah.
like, whatever, one more rejection, who cares? Because through my turmoil of growing up in this country, I ended up relying on drugs and alcohol to get me through my teen years, and finally I got sober at 21. At that point, I just said, screw it, I'm not afraid of anything, and I'll make happen what I want in my life. So I went after Don King, and
Wow.
that was that.
That's great. Did your mom support you? Or your family at that point?
My mom was afraid because with all the head injuries, brain damage in boxing, she was very worried. But she did support me, and she worked every single fight till the day she died. She died in 2011. She was my corner person for my entire career.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you know how most fighters have their dads in the corner? My mom was in the corner.
Did you look up to anybody and admire anybody that kind of motivated you to do it?
I really looked up to Oscar De La Hoya because, and he went through so much, especially when he fought Julio Cesar Chavez.
Yeah,
It was the real Mexican
I
versus.
talked about that on one of my podcasts.
Yeah, and I thought it was really sad because I thought, here, this poor guy, here, he's like me, he's the hyphen in between.
Well, you know what? I was secretly rooting for him, but
Yeah.
I couldn't say it. Because I would get hated on if I said that. I was like, no, he's doing the
Well,
right thing. He's fighting the best.
he is, and I'll tell you the thing about Julio Cesar Chavez. I love him. I love his son. But I did too root for Oscar De La Hoya because I thought he's the epitome of Mexican American,
Did you have to do it
right?
in secret like I did? Because of where I grew up, I had to. Or you could actually vocalize it and say.
I just reminded people. I didn't say who I was for, but I just reminded people all that De La Hoya has done for the community, for the Latinos here in California, to try and better their education. All that he has given back. And to me, that's a real role model. That's a real hero. I'm not going to say that other Latino fighters didn't really give back, but I'm going to say that Oscar did. And to me, I'll always root for the real hero, the one who gives back to the people. Because those are the people that buy our tickets, that come to see us fight. And if you don't give back to the community, I don't know, to me, like, we're obligated. We owe them that. And especially as Latinos, like, we owe it to our people.
Yeah, we get so much back in return from the government and from everybody, like you stated with the school system.
Yeah.
I think they do rely on people like you and Oscar to give back. And
Yeah.
sometimes it's not just money, it's just with your time, and
Yeah.
growing to speak to them, I think it matters.
Yeah. And Oscar did a lot. He did a lot. He did so many charities and did the charter schools
The
and
gym.
yeah, and really promoted education. So yeah, I always admired him, and that was one of my reasons. Like, he was a role model. I started El Saber Poder. My sister encouraged me to start it, but he was definitely a role model.
Yeah, great. Yeah, let me move on. I always say, we Chicanos have to work twice as hard just to get a pass. We have to overcome all the stereotypes. Has being Chicana helped you or maybe made it harder in your career choice?
I feel like I got really lucky because when I turned pro in boxing and when I had my first fight on Univision, it was at the Olympic Auditorium in downtown LA. And I got a standing ovation. puro Latinos in the crowd. I mean, it was crazy that the Mexicans accepted me like I had never been accepted. They gave me a free pass on anything I did because it was almost like they claimed me as one of their own. She's ours. Took me away from the white people. Said, she's not yours, she's ours. And I gladly went because.
So it's not that you actually tried to get them, they grabbed
Oh, they hijacked me and said, you're ours. And I loved it because for the first time in my life, I felt like I was wanted somewhere. And if the Mexicans were going to claim me, well, then I was damn well going to go with them, you know, and screw the white population, you know. So from then on, I catered to everything Latino. You know, when I put out a workout DVD, if I was going to do it in English, well,
How to be
damn right, I was
Hispanic.
going to do it in Spanish. You know, I was going to do, if I was going to do, you know, an English interview, I was going to also do, like when I did Leno and Conan, I also did El Gordo y la Flaca. I went to
Wow.
Miami and I did, you know, both. I never excluded the Latinos from everything. Everything I did, I made sure I represented that. If I came out in the ring, I came out with both flags. Never just have one because,
Deloitte used to do that too, didn't he?
yeah,
Yeah.
because I felt like I'm first generation to be born in this country. I'm the only one to be born in this, and my family's still in Mexico. So I have to represent both. I can't alienate one. And people would say, but you're born in America and this is your country.
But you know what? You were also playing to the fans, weren't you?
Totally.
You know, that's what they love you
Yeah.
for that. They love you
Yeah.
for carrying that little flag.
Yeah. And there was no way that I was going to alienate or piss off those fans because I felt like my loyalty was with them because they were the ones who made me who I am. They're the ones who made me popular. They're the ones who made me famous. So
Right.
there was no way in hell I was gonna,
No,
you know.
that's just smart marketing, you know? And plus the fact that you do have Mexico. I
Oh
mean, you definitely have the right to carry that flag, right?
yeah, for sure. And you know, by the way, I don't personally, I don't salute any flag. I don't pledge my allegiance to any one country. I'm a humanitarian. I pledge my allegiance to the
Human race.
world, to humanity.
Well, I gotta bring up Playboy. I can't do this without mentioning Playboy. How did that come about?
Well, I got a call. It was after, I think, De La Jolla Corte. Yeah, De La Jolla Corte. Or Trinidad. I don't know. It was one of the, after one of the De La Jolla fights, Playboy called my promoter, Bob Arum, and made me an offer. And, of course, you know, I did it. And it was a great offer, and it really skyrocketed my career.
You're probably the first and only Chicana on the cover.
You know, Playboy said that I was the first, I forgot how they worded it. I was the first, I don't know if they said Mexican American, but something like that on the cover of Playboy. And the reason it meant so much to me was because I originally wasn't the cover. Half, everybody knows this, so I can say this. Half loves blonde, blue-eyed women. Loves them. So he had of course, he had a blonde, blue-eyed woman picked for the cover, and I was going to be, and I called, I don't agree with that. Like, I think I'm beautiful enough to be the cover.
Offer it?
Yeah, I fought for
You are
it.
militant.
And they said, you know, okay, when we get the photos back, we'll have him look at it and he'll make a decision. Anyway, they called me a couple days later and said, you know, guess what? You're the cover.
That's awesome.
And because I experienced so much as a kid, like, the boys hated me at school because I was, you know, I was curvy. I had a big nose, big lips, and dark hair and dark skin. And so I was never like really sought after
So you
school.
never felt sexy?
Never felt beautiful. I always felt
Really?
ugly, you know.
So that was your revenge?
Yeah, it was my revenge. I felt like, you know what? Screw all you blonde, blue-eyed.
You guys had it wrong.
Yeah, and so I was really proud of that. I said, you know what? Like, we are beautiful. And that was kind of like my statement to like so-called white society, you know,
Yeah.
that we are beautiful
Oh yeah, that was awesome. So I guess it wasn't too hard to say yes to that then. But my follow-up question to that was, what did your family think? I mean, now that you told me the religious aspect of your mom and
My mother was, my dad had left kind of when I was a kid. He left when I was like 12, so he wasn't really in the picture at that time. But my mom, being, you know, the capitalist that she was, like, hey, money really? Is great. Yeah,
like,
do it.
How much? Oh, yeah, you're doing
exactly,
it.
Exactly. That's the first thing she said was how much. And when I told her, she says, oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah, you'll
and
do it.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, that was my mom. Like, she just wanted me to be a success in this country. That was her dream.
You know, I didn't want to, but I had to do my research, so I, you know, prepare for this. So I did go look at some of those pictures on Playboy on the cover. I'm sure you're proud of doing that because you came out great. But are there any regrets? Because you do have an older daughter, don't you?
Oh, yeah. No. No regrets because I have a son and a daughter. And, yeah, they did go, like, when they were in school, my daughter's 20 and my son's 23, but when they were in school, yeah, the pictures circulated the school. Got around to them
purposely because they were there, I imagine.
Right.
So was there any point where you might have regretted it?
No, I never regretted it, but my kids, yeah, were embarrassed. But they were embarrassed because not just
but they knew about it, didn't they?
Right. Uh-huh. And it wasn't, they weren't just embarrassed because I did Playboy, but because I was a famous boxer and their dad is a famous actor. So they didn't want famous parents. They just wanted to, like,
be
normal.
Normal
kids. So it wasn't so much the Playboy, it was just all that went with having famous parents.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
They didn't want to have, so they didn't want to have to live up, especially any expectations that people placed on them. But I never regretted anything because I feel like everything I've done in my life was meant to be and led me to another place.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I was going to ask you next. I mean, did all that put together make you a celebrity? Do you consider yourself a celebrity or still just a boxer? Or is there more to you than
I guess, I don't know. I don't even know. Like, what is a celebrity? Yeah, I guess it did. You know, it really put me in the limelight. And, yeah, then I ended up on the A-list shows like Leno and Conan and Good Morning America. And so, yeah, it really put me out there. But then, like, every career, you know, you start going downhill and out with the old and in with the new. And this is part of, you know,
part of life,
part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get older, and I have people that come up to me and say, oh, yeah, I remember you way back in the 90s. And like, oh, my God, like, that was 100 years
ago.
Yeah,
like, if it was that far.
Yeah. And, or people that say, oh, my God, you're still fighting after all these years. And
I think it's great. I wish I could do sports like I used to when I was a kid. I mean, it's awesome that you're still working out and fighting.
Yeah.
How do you do it, you know? Do you speak fluent Spanish?
I do interviews in Spanish. Like I said, I did El Gordo y la Flaca many times, and
I do
all of them. But no, I'm not fluent in Spanish.
No, you don't feel you are, or you're not? You know you're not? Or,
you know,
or is it insecurity?
I think, number one, it's insecurity.
Because I think I am until I'm in Mexico, and then they're like, correct me.
I know! Right?
Yeah.
Like, and the reason I think that I'm not fluent is cause, like, yeah, it's easy for me to go do interviews in Spanish, right? Because I'm a celebrity. If I screw up, no one cares.
Yeah, you get a pass.
Right. So I could just throw out an English word and no one says anything.
Right.
It's no big deal. But you're right. Like, when I'm talking to my family, they can point out everything that's wrong, everything that I said that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing an interview, no one's going to point out anything. I guess when I'm doing interviews, yeah, I'm fluent. But
yeah,
when I'm talking to real people, real Mexicans, they're like, yeah, no, you suck.
So you really, really still enjoy boxing like you used to?
It's the love of my life.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It's the love of my life. But I know that, you know, like everything, every career ends. Everybody has to retire one day.
You're not officially retired, are you?
No. No. And in my sport, you know, you don't last that long. You know, same with football players and basketball players. Everybody has to retire in their middle ages. And this is a hard pill to swallow. But
you still get offers, though, right?
Yeah, in fact, I'm fighting the world champion, three-time world champion in April in Denmark.
Oh, my God. That's what you're going to go into training for? Do you basically, like go away and just train for 2 months or whatever?
Yeah.
And don't see anyone and just concentrate on
training?
Well,
yeah, it's not that I don't see anybody, or that I purposely don't. I just don't want to. I'm just
right,
so
I mean,
tired and,
but you're still into the training.
Yeah.
That's all you have. That's all you focus on.
Exactly.
That's really good. Wow, that's going to be a tough fight.
Yes, especially because she's so young, and I'm at the end of my career. But, you know, it's the way the sport goes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of think it was bullshit by President Obama to say he wouldn't let his son play football. I don't know if you remember, that was on the news, being that he doesn't have a son. So it's easy for him to say that.
Weird.
It was all hypothetical, so, you know.
Yeah.
But your answer, I think, you know, actually mean something, where I think Obama's did it on football, you know, without a son. Would you want your daughter to follow in your footsteps and
Never.
Fight for a living?
Never.
No?
No, because I feel that, number one, again, I'd rather my children focus on higher learning, on something more significant in life than going into the ring and beating the shit out of another person.
Really?
That's not significant.
Is that the right word, significant? Because you are significant to a lot of us. You inspire a lot of us.
I think what I did outside the ring.
I would say also in the ring.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I feel that I want to see not just my kids, but other minorities do other things rather than sports.
That's a good point.
I feel that as minorities, if you're African American or Latino, you're automatically assumed, the assumption is you're going to go into sports. You're going to be a football player.
And how many actually make it? That's the other thing. Right.
Right. You know? Right. And I don't want the kids, my kids or any other kids, I don't know, especially with boxing, like it's such a dangerous sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they're beating our brains in every single day, killing brain cells, and so many of the fighters end up punch drunk and dementia and can barely function when they hit their middle ages. But, you know, why would I want, my kids are so much more capable of doing something much greater in life than that. Because when you go into that ring, you have to have the mentality that I'm going in there, and if I got to take another person's life, I damn well will. Because it's my life or their life.
They're trying to take yours in a way.
Right, so you've got to be willing to either A, die yourself, or B, kill someone. Because if you're in the ring and you're punching the crap out of somebody, there's not 1 second that you stop and say, whoa, I'm about to render this human being unconscious. I could kill him. Your brain's not saying that. Your brain's saying, go, until the ref literally jumps in between you and stops the fight.
Or else you probably wouldn't stop.
Hell
right?
No. Have you ever seen a fighter stop and say, hey, dude, are you okay?
Yeah. Did I knock
Never
you down?
Seen.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever done that? No.
That's true.
No.
And it takes a certain personality to be that.
You have to be.
Were you born with that?
Dysfunctional. I was so born with that because I was born with an alcoholic father. I became an alcoholic myself. I grew up poor. When you come from poverty and drug and alcohol abuse, and I had a very, you know, violent father. I love my father, but he was violent as a child. And when you come from that background, as so many of, you know, Latinos do, and unfortunately African Americans, when you grow up in that lifestyle, hell yeah, you're dysfunctional. You're going in that ring and you don't care who you kill. You know, and I don't like that. I don't like that in me.
You can turn that off, though?
No. I think that the fact that, I always say, thank God I became a boxer, because if I didn't, I'd be in jail. Because I have that in me. I have that dysfunction.
So that's
in
your
me.
Where you can let
that's
that go.
That's where I let it out. Yeah. It keeps me sane on the outside, because I don't want to get into confrontation, because...
You already had it.
I already have it. I'm getting paid for it out there in the ring, and I'm not getting paid for it here, so I'm not gonna.
So I would say in retirement, you would still do that as a workout.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You work on the gym, you go hit the bag.
Oh yeah.
You'd spar maybe.
Sure.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
That is really cool. You know, I also read that you participated in a mental health clinic sponsored by Representative Napolitano, I think,
yeah.
and along with Ron Artest.
Yeah.
And you know, in our community, we quickly say, "Oh, está loco, give him a beer." Or sometimes a machismo in us men, we don't realize or want to recognize what we have, and we treat ourselves with alcohol and illegal drugs. Or sometimes we just think we have to put up with it and never see a doctor and our families suffer.
Right. There's a stigma in Latinos and mental health.
Can you talk about why you were involved with that?
Yeah, I was myself was diagnosed with OCD as a child. And I was hospitalized later in life and put on medication. As so many fighters are, because we're all crazy. And then, like I said, my son became ill. My publicist said, hey, Congresswoman Napolitano is doing a Mental Health in Schools Act. I'm trying to get the bill passed. And Ron Artest, who has mental health issues.
That one we know of.
Right. And he's endorsing the bill. And so she approached Napolitano, who is, you know, Latina herself, and said, hey, what about adding me at St. John? And so they did. They added me to the team, and I've gone to Washington many times.
That is really
and,
cool.
Yeah, and the bill hasn't passed yet, but we're hoping.
Yeah, I'm thinking with all these shootings and stuff going on, there's going to be you're going to probably be real busy with that.
And I wanted to, like, be a representative for Latinos because it is such a stigma. It's lack of education again.
Mm-hmm.
It's ignorance because
a lot of pride sometimes, especially in the men. Maybe.
Oh yeah.
I mean, a depressed Latino? No such thing.
Right.
Depressed Latinos do not exist.
Right.
So we say, right?
Right.
Let me go on here. A lot of us first generation Chicanos grew up with very little. You know, I know when I was a kid, I wanted so bad to eat at places like Chili's. That was a big deal. But you know, the fuckers wouldn't take food stamps. That's a bad joke.
Yeah.
But did poverty play a role in your life?
I just wanted to eat at McDonald's. Yeah, like you said, like we...
Did it make you hungrier? No pun intended. Not that hungrier, really, but wanting to do more because you wanted more? Did you have a hunger to have more things, to do more?
You know, I always think, you know, I'm grateful I grew up poor because, you know, our dream was to go to McDonald's. And we only went to McDonald's, like, if there was, like, a birthday or special occasion, you know, right? Otherwise, you know, we had to deal with my mom's cooking, which was great. But, you know, she would say, I can make you an American hamburger.
And my mom would say the same
thing. And the bread would be all soggy. And, oh, it was like.
And they give it to you with sliced bread. And
oh,
you're
my
like, that
God.
That ain't a hamburger.
Yes. And I went to work in the fields picking strawberries at 10 years old. So when people say, like, you know, they don't realize how hard Mexicans work. Like, they don't realize that when you're out there picking in the 100-degree weather in those fields, you think that's easy work? I was the slowest picker in the field. I knew that one day I was going to say, fuck you all. Kiss my ass.
So it was spite.
And
oh, no way.
Yeah, so that was my motivation to become something. Because I was going to grow up and become rich and famous and give the finger to y'all. Right? To all you white folks. And, you know, it's sad because it made me kind of grow up. I hate to say this, but I became a little bit of a racist myself. I looked at white people as the enemy. Everything I did was to get back at white society. I became very militant, you know.
And, so maybe a little bitter at times?
Very bitter.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. And so I worked really hard to change my ways and not be, because I don't agree with racism, no matter what your circumstances.
In any direction.
I don't agree with it. But it's something I had to work really hard at. And I still battle it. Every day I still battle it, but I work on it. Mm-hmm. I don't let myself get away with it.
Moving on here to August 14th, 2012. Seems like it was a big day for you.
It's huge.
I know it meant a lot to your fans and Chicanos and Chicanas everywhere.
Yeah.
What did it mean to you?
I waited 9 years for that rematch. You know, it meant everything. The only regret I have is that my mom didn't live long enough. She died right before the fight, and I know she would have been so proud. So that was my only regret, is she didn't live to see it. But, yeah, it meant a lot to me and the fans, because the Latinos all felt like I'd won the first fight, and I did myself. So to finally get that revenge and win that title back.
Here I have El Saber Es Poder. Do you want to talk any more about that organization and what its real intent is?
Yeah, so, I mean, people can go to MiaSaintJohnFoundation.org and look up our programs. And like I said, we have a program in El Centro, in Echo Park. It's a whole community, it's a community center that they have specifically for the inner city kids there, which, of course, caters to mainly, you know, the Latino community. And there's a lot of programs, and mine is just one of the many programs that they have. And like I said, I use boxing as my tool to reel them in.
Kind of bait, huh?
Bait.
Yeah.
And once I get them, they know I'm all about education. And I've taught those kids, like, I've encouraged them to, a lot of them come to me and they've already been in trouble with the law, juvenile hall, kicked out of school. The courts let them come to me. And if they do well, they slowly integrate them back into the school system. Yeah. And if anyone wants to get involved or donate, then you just go to my foundation website.
Yeah, because, I mean, I imagine that's your way of giving back to the community, because I don't think we do that enough, and I include myself. I mean, I'm trying to do something with this, which I don't know what it really means, but I should be giving more back.
You're giving, you're speaking out, and hopefully it'll grow, and you get more people to, like you said, to do, you know, the podcast, and you get it out there, and the more people know that Chicano is something to be proud of, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah, and if I get people like you in here, I mean, you're a good role model, you know? You're an awesome role model for young Chicanas, especially.
You gotta get Oscar De La Hoya.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
You know him. Help me out.
Oh my gosh. I can't even. I'm trying to get an interview with him for my documentary. Yeah. And
He's that busy?
You just gotta call. Yeah, because I guess he lives in Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he goes back.
Catch him when he's here.
Yeah.
But you were just perfect for this because you're awesome because not only are you Chicana, but I preach a lot of the education part. You have a degree. And I was like, man, she just fits perfect. You know, what advice do you have for young and even older Chicanas looking to make it in sports, entertainment, or just life?
Education. I can't say it. My mom used to say, educación. There's just no other way around it. And I'm not saying if you have a college degree, you're going to become rich. I say, don't even worry about that. Don't even think about being rich or, I am rich. Not financially, like I don't think of myself as rich or poor financially. I think of myself being rich in life. Mm-hmm. I've done everything I've always wanted to do. I've overcome so many obstacles. I'm enlightened, educated, and that being wealthy. And so I tell Latinos, like, no matter what, just get an education because that's a tool that no one's ever going to take away from you. You're going to lose your job or you're going to go into retirement, but your education is
they can't take it away. Yeah, I almost see it as a weapon, you know. We're out there. It's a fight out there. It's tough. And if you have that education, you have something to defend yourself with. Kind of like the way you did with promoters. Once you opened your mouth and they heard there was an educated woman there, they step back and they're thinking twice about
About screwing you.
Yeah. About throwing tranzas on you.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get away with it. You understood. You could read.
Yeah.
You were willing to pick up a contract and read it. I did want to mention, as I did more research on you, I guess there's a book and a DVD about working out, diet, and life. They're on Amazon.
Yeah, so you can get my book on Amazon, and it's a lifestyle book. It's on mental health, nutrition, and fitness.
So it's everything.
Yeah, it's everything. And, so you can get it either on Amazon or MiaSaintJohn.com. And follow me on Twitter, at MiaSaintJohnBoxer.
Anything else you want, you know, that's coming up with you and boxing or anything else?
Watch out for my tweets and follow my fight that's coming up.
What's the fight again?
It's April 13th, Denmark.
Well, that's all I have. Did we miss anything? You feel good about this?
Yeah, it was good. Thank you so much. You got this in pocket. Gunpowder. I'm gonna use it. Intention. Been diving, detour leaning, no visa, just seems so pleasing, gonna make you notice, gonna use my arms, gonna use my legs, gonna use my style, gonna use my sidestep.
Mia, how is it you ended up doing a Chicano Cast podcast interview?
Truthfully, I think I got lucky. I was at the right place at the right time.
Mia, so what do you say about doing another Chicano Cast podcast interview? Come on, come on. I think you want to.
Because I had an education. You can't screw me like you can screw me. Well.